Well, shalom, and welcome to another 2 hours of Jewish Soul Music. I'm your host, Charlie Bernhout. This will be a rather unusual program, actually, this week and the forthcoming weeks. This is show number 302 for July 6th, 2015. As you are aware, I have been broadcasting since 1977, and when I come upon this three-week period, there's always a dilemma of what to play, what not to play, and so forth. Well, I made a decision. I decided that this would be a great opportunity to contact various cantors and various leaders of those who are promoting traditional chazanis and to interview them. And I have begun these interviews, and I trust that you will find them of interest. I have found them of great interest. There's no question about that. The first and second hour, first hour will be Cantor Benny Rogoznitsky, Cantor Zevi Muller, and Cantor Yaakov Motzen, and the second will be Cantor Yossi Malavani and David Guber. I have other interviews already for next week, and I'm working on the following week. And who knows, I may even continue this for another week or two, because I think this is, in a way, historic. It's very important to learn about the background of these cantors and those who support Chazonis, and perhaps you will be inspired. So without further ado, let's get to the first interview. All of these interviews were done this past week. These are rather current. I might mention that I contacted a few cantors who I have interviewed in the past year or two, and there was a slight reluctance. One said, "I have nothing new to add, but we'll see. We'll see about that." Okay, let's get to Cantor Benny Rogoznitsky. I'm very pleased to have with me on the phone my good friend Cantor Benny Rogoznitsky of Park East Synagogue. Shalom, Benny.
Shalom, Charlie, and shalom to all the listeners.
Okay, this is a very special setup that we're doing for the 3 weeks. I decided rather than playing music, I'm going to just speak to the people who make the music, and you are first on my list. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Benny. How did you become interested in chazanis?
So I was born in England, in Liverpool, England, and as a young fellow, I moved to South Africa. And my dad was a rabbi in Yeovil, in Johannesburg. And South Africa, as you know, Charlie, has a great tradition of cantorial music. And as a child, I was drawn to the Central Synagogue in Johannesburg, where the great cantor Johnny Gluck used to daven. And my prize for being a good boy is that my dad would walk me over there once a month on Shabbos Mevarchim to listen to the cantor sing. And I remember as a kid walking in there mesmerized by his beautiful tenor voice. And I wanted to be a part of the choir. I wanted to be a part of the music. And it was just, it was a dream for me ever since I heard him perform.
He was your mentor, from what I understand.
Yes. Unfortunately and tragically, Johnny passed away at a very young age. But for the few years that I knew him, I used to go there regularly on Shabbat. And I used to stand right at the edge of the choir, and I was an unofficial member of it. And after Shabbos, we used to get together, and he would teach me, even as a kid, teach me Nusach. He taught me a lot of the rhythms of the davening, explained to me, you know, the pathos and the meaning behind so many things. And it was a very, very meaningful experience and a very great loss for me at the time as a young kid to lose someone who I really idolized.
Yes, I remember you told me you particularly went to the hospital quite frequently to see him.
Yes, I remember that vividly, going to the hospital. And he was a very, very strong person, and he had a tremendous amount of faith. And I remember once as visiting him in the hospital, and he said to me, "I want to give you a gift." And he said, "I'm going to sing something for you." And he sang the Shir HaMalos, the Rosenblatt Shir HaMalos. And I recall, just as if it were yesterday, that the nurses and doctor in the hallway came in just to hear his voice. It was just so magnificent.
Wow. Wow. And in Johannesburg, they had so many other great cantors. It was really an area where Chazonus was very appreciated, and I think even still today.
Yes. Yeah, they have a very, very fine tradition of really some of the greatest cantors in the world.
Well, after Johannesburg, then where did you you go?
Then I moved back to England, and I actually went to study music, and I studied cantorial music also with Cantor Hillman. I went to the Conservatory of Music in Manchester, and then Manchester to Israel was not that far, so I traveled. I studied with the great Cantor Hershtick and quite a few other Chazanim, and I slowly picked up the tools of the trade. And as a youngster, 14 years old, was my first position as a cantor in Brighton in England. I remember it was by default. The cantor had fallen ill, and someone had notified my dad, who was the rabbi of one of the communities, that they were looking for a cantor, and I guess they couldn't find anyone at the last minute. And my dad said, you know, I believe in my son. He has a nice voice. He hasn't done this before, but if you have no one else, he certainly knows the Nusa. And they gave me a chance. And Charlie, I made a copy of the check that I received. It was £500.
Wow.
And until today, I keep it with me because it was the first time I ever got paid to sing.
Did you live in Israel?
I lived in Israel, but only for short periods. My parents were in England, so I would travel back and forth. But I was really based out of England. And then after my stint in Brighton, I was offered a position in Sale, which is just south of Manchester. And I of one of the Manchester suburbs, and I was there for 2 years before moving to the United States.
I've always been impressed with your knowledge of Hebrew and I believe Yiddish. Where did you learn Yiddish?
So Yiddish, when we were in school in South Africa, we spoke Yiddish. The kids, many kids spoke to each other. Many of the Jews of South Africa were Lithuanian, of Lithuanian descent, so their parents spoke Yiddish, and my parents spoke Yiddish. And in Hebrew, my mom's Israeli, so we at home, my mom spoke in Hebrew, and so I learned it as all really as a mother tongue.
I didn't realize the Yiddish aspect from your mother.
Yes, the Hebrew was more from my mother, and the Yiddish was more from the school.
From the school, And now, when did you come to the States?
So I came to the States in January of '96. Then as the cantor of the Jewish Center on the West Side.
Uh-huh. And that's when we met.
Correct. We met, I remember that too as if it were yesterday, with our mutual friend, Dr. Robert Weiss, who incidentally was the first person who ever invited me for a meal in the United States, the first Shabbos that I arrived.
Yeah, wonderful couple. Wonderful couple.
Great lover of Chazanus and equally a great lover of Israel. I remember when I said to him, Robert, how will I know that where you live? He said, you walk on West End Avenue, and where you see the sign, Ha'ami Magolan, you know that's my home.
He still has it. He still has it in the window.
And then I remember that I was invited by the Kalbach Shul to give a talk, to lead services, and then give a talk on the Yosla Rosenblatt. And I think you came over to me and you said, oh, you know.
Well, it was a Friday night dinner, and Robert called me and said, this young fella is going to give a talk on Yesala, and let's go. So, yes, I sat next to you at the dinner, and we had an interesting conversation.
And you see, because I had grown up in Europe, I'd never heard the name. Like, you know, have so many people heard of your radio show and your concerts. To me, I was the new kid on the block. I was like, okay, another guy that loves Chazanus. I didn't realize at the time what sort of history and affinity you had to cantorial music. I only learned, you know, subsequently who you were, and then we became great friends and partners.
Yes, and we had some exciting times at the Jewish Center.
Yes, certainly. That's really where the idea of Cantor's World was born, with the December concerts that were filled from wall to wall. And then we moved on to even greater events.
Yes, but we should have learned a certain lesson. We sold out almost every one of those concerts and still couldn't make a penny.
Yes, we mastered the art of making great music and bringing great cantors, but never of making a buck.
Well, I remember you had told me that the shul was reluctant to do a concert because they were sure that no one would come and they would lose money. And I remember I said, invite me to the next meeting. And that's where I said, listen, I have my list of all my listeners and people who've donated to Seton Hall, the radio station. And I had my own private list and I would give them to you. And that would be a foundation of potential people attending, and I spoke and I said it'll be a huge success, and they did it, and they were very successful as cultural events.
Yes, they were very successful, and the community loved them, and it also brought a beautiful mix of Jews to the synagogue, and it was just, they were very special evenings.
Yes. And then one day we were talking and you came up with, hey, listen, we've got something here.
Yes, I remember people saying to me, oh, you know, cantorial music is dead and nobody's ever going to come to concerts. But then I think we learned from the events that we did at the Jewish Center that if it was packaged correctly, people were still very much interested. And we took it, you know, we started, if you recall, first at the smaller hall, at Alice Tully Hall, and then we moved to Avery Fisher. And then we moved to the Metropolitan Opera. We had a really phenomenal run. But I think that the image that will always stay in my mind of Cantor's World was standing at one of the windows looking out to 65th Street from the Metropolitan Opera and looking at the, about a half hour before the curtain call, the thousands of Jews from all walks of life that were coming on a cold Sunday evening to experience, you know, history and cantorial music, young and old alike. And it was just heartwarming, especially to all the naysayers who said it couldn't be done.
Yes. And this was the first time that many people ever attended an event at the Metropolitan, much less any event at Lincoln Center.
Yes.
It was quite special, to say the least.
It certainly was. And, you know, we hope that, B'ezrat Hashem, we will be able to do those wonderful events once again in the near future.
Well, I think the Shabbos weekends are also among the most memorable things, that people still come up to you and to me. And when are we going to have the next Shabbos weekend?
It's amazing, Charlie. I have met people at the most unlikely places in the world. You know, going through the TSA checkpoints in L.A., traveling to Israel and waiting online in security, and just at the Kotel, people are like, one second, you're Cantor's World. You're Charlie Bernhout's friend, you know? and then people, what's so amazing is that how many people have told me that, oh, I've listened to Charlie for 30 years. You know, I remember, again, like I said earlier, because I wasn't born here, I didn't have that appreciation because I didn't know you before. But people are your Hasidim. And to them, this was like the culmination of all these years of beautiful music that you were providing for them.
Yes.
You know, it was just very, very, very unique and very special.
Well, people who love Chazanis love it passionately. You rarely find an in-between. They either don't like it, but when a person says to me, I hate Chazanis, my answer is, you never really heard Chazanis. Because if you really heard the real stuff, you have to be touched by the neshama, by the soul.
Yes, it's very true. I mean, much of Chazanis has to do with tradition. If you were brought up with it, and if your parents appreciated it, and it's the connection to the generation that went before us. But I agree with you. Many people simply don't have the patience or haven't been exposed to it in a meaningful way. Because Chazanis ultimately is the music of the soul. And if you understand the words and you understand what's going on, it can move you to just great heights. It's something that's very, very moving on many levels.
Well, I was 41 years old when I first discovered Chazanis. That was when I was at Larry Gordon's Jewish and Hebrew Sound, and I was interviewed, and I offered my old 78 records, because I've been collecting these records. Never listened to them. Never had any knowledge of Chazanis. But when I heard Rosenblatt and Hirschman and Kvartin, it touched me. So I agree that it's great if you were raised with it, but you can also get an appreciation of it at any age. That's
right.
My feeling.
You remind me of the story in the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, who the Talmud says was equal in greatness to the great Moshe Rabbeinu. At the age of 40, he did not know Aleph Beis, and yet, you know, he studied and he became one of the greatest leaders the Jews ever had. So if he could do it with Aleph Beis, all our listeners could do it, you know, with cantorial
right.
music.
By the way, in my presentation of Yosla Rosenblatt, I give about a 5-minute bit of Henry of Ralph Rosenblatt at our concert where we ran honoring Yosla Rosenblatt, and it is so special to hear Ralph, you know, talking about the family, and it's quite historic. It really touches people.
That was another one of the highlights, you know, bringing Ralph with his deep bass baritone voice, and to have him stand up there as Cantor Stark was singing the Kelmale Rachmim, it was just a unification of worlds that no one could have ever imagined. It was so deeply touching.
Well, I also tell the story how it was a week or two before when we were sold out. You and I went to a concert up in Riverdale or someplace in northern Manhattan, and we heard Stark, and we looked at each other, and we said, "We got to get this guy for a surprise guest." And he was quite a surprise for the crowd.
You know what, Charlie? You're reminding me exactly. We went to a concert up in Washington Heights, and I remember he got up to sing, and I was jumping out of my skin. I couldn't get over it. The you know, not just his beautiful voice, but the meaning that he put into it. It was effortless. And I remember turning to him and saying, "We just have to get him for the concert." And he was a star. He was a star, and he is a star. And
yes,
he just has a very unique blend of Chazanis, and he's a great guy.
Yes, the audience really appreciated it, and they still remember that, those who attended it. Today, who are some of your favorite Chazanim, either from the past or the present? Or are there particular selections of any of the greats that particularly appeal to you?
So if I said anyone in the present, you know, I'd lose friends.
Okay, so let's leave the present.
Because
I do that also, I said.
So my favorites are really what I would consider the golden oldies, you know. The great Yosla Rosenblatt, I don't think in my mind there was ever a greater Chazan, and I know that's arguable because some will say Kosevitzky, and just to me, my personal feeling, Rosenblatt brings a certain sincerity, a certain beauty that I've never heard in another Chazan, and the fact that he was an Orthodox Jew and was sincere about his prayers speaks to me very, very much, and so he really is a cantor that I idolize, and whether it's the Hineni, and if you think about it, the piece is not that intricate, but it's so moving, and it, you know, talks about how the cantor comes before God, but it's just, you can hear his heart in the words. And then there are pieces like, you know, age-old classics, like Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael. You know, Jews, unfortunately, were schooled in trouble, in problems in the world. And you hear Chazanim, even today, sing that beautiful piece. It's so moving about how, at the end of the day, we care about every Jew in the world, wherever they may be. So I would say that Rosenblatt is definitely my hero.
Okay. Any secondary ones you want to discuss?
I think Kosevitzky is right up top there, less for the soul and more for the majesty of the voice. You know, I think when you hear, it's part of what people actually say about Cantor Helfgott, which is when you hear them singing, there's a certain awe in the sound, in the, you know, it's beautiful. It's you know, it's just a tremendous sound. You look up and you say, "Oh my God, I can't believe that this person has this sort of instrument." And so when you hear Kosevitzky, you hear the recordings, you hear his ability to hit these notes and not just hit them once but sustain them. It's like shock and awe.
Uh-huh.
It really is amazing. So I would say Kosevitzky's right up there.
Uh-huh. Now, this is going to be an easy one or a tough one. What's your feeling about the future for Chazanis?
So I'll tell you, I think you and I have something in common. We have many things in common, but the fact that we are eternal optimists. You see, I think that the one thing that Chazanis needs is a great marketer. The music is still there, and people still love it. I just think that it's been buried for a long time, and I think what we need is someone to come out and to repackage it, and to package it in an age where people want everything to be short, and they don't have the patience to sit at services till 2 in the afternoon on Shabbos. But that doesn't mean that they don't love and appreciate Chazanis. And I think both my Rabbi Arthur Schneier, and Rabbi Mark Schneier, deserve tremendous amount of credit for what they have done in sustaining cantorial music, proving, especially I give credit to Rabbi Mark for doing this, that when you package Chazanis correctly, you can fill the house. And Natani Hershtick does that week after week. So I'm very hopeful that that we haven't seen the last of great cantors, and that the time will come, and may even be happening now slowly, where there will be a real revival of cantorial music, both on stage, but equally important, if not more so, at the Amud.
Well, there's a lot of very fine young talent out there, but I know it's very frustrating for many of them because full-time jobs are rare indeed.
Yes, it's very frustrating because so much goes into the study of cantorial music. It's such a difficult discipline. And to put all that effort in and then to come to a synagogue that says to you, well, you know, we don't really need this. We can get one of our members to lead services. You know, it's what's the message there? But part of this is education, but part of this also lies in the responsibility of the cantor to really, you know, remarket, reshape how the cantorial music is delivered, in what form and in what format. But I do believe that there is a great future out there.
Well, I remember about a couple of years ago, I interviewed Chaim Adler, and I had said to him, when a young person comes to me and asks me about how do I become a cantor and so forth, I usually say, look, I don't know your voice. I don't know if you're a health god or, you know, you might be a Stern. I don't know. I can't even judge that. But if you're not, it's going to be very hard to get a job that will support a family and sending kids to yeshiva and have a home and so forth. And I said, I think you should really go out and get a regular job and let the Chazanis be your avocation. And it was so interesting. Cantor Adler said to me, I disagree with you. He said, if you have the drive and the spirit and you just keep going at it, you can make it a success. And it was very optimistic. I didn't really get into an argument with him, but he felt that I was wrong in more or less discouraging this as a full-time way of earning a living.
Right. I mean, I think ultimately, as much as we're optimists, we're realists. There aren't that many synagogues that are going to be able to afford or that will have the interest in employing full-time cantorial positions as they did yesteryear, let's say 50 years ago. But that doesn't mean that you can't earn a very substantial secondary income from cantorial music. Again, if as a group we market it correctly, we reach out to the communities, and we repackage what we have to sell.
It was interesting. The other night, I gave my Rosenblatt presentation in Teaneck. We had about 100 people there, and afterwards, we had this discussion. And I said, you know, here you have a community with maybe a dozen or 15 Orthodox shuls, and not one full-time cantor. And I said, you know, my goal minimally would be bring in a cantor once, twice a year, once a year. Of course, I know that Mutzen comes there frequently, and Netanel lives in Teaneck, and he does something, I'm not sure, more than once a year. But if every Jewish community or synagogue would hire a chazan once a year, you know, to let him loose, so to speak, it would keep a lot of cantors busy.
Yes, it's a very novel idea, and I agree with you.
Oh, well. Anyway, Benny, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. And any other closing thoughts concerning the world of Chazanut?
You know, I would just say this in closing. You asked me what to me really is the most important question in this interview. Is there a future to Chazanus? But I think the answer lies in many ways within this program and within your attitude to Chazanus, because you really have been a light in what has been a very dark period in cantorial music, where a lot of people have eulogized and buried the cantorial tradition. You have kept it going, and I know that you've done it at a significant personal cost, and you keep on, whether it's the Rosenblatt presentations, whether it's the dozens of people I meet that tell me that they ask you for music, and you schlep out to New Jersey to make copies of these recordings that you have,
The calendar is also rather interesting.
And the calendar.
Yes.
I think that you give a lot of people hope.
But Benny, I could not have done this without you. And you are my guide. Actually, you know, you talk about marketing. I want the listeners to know that I admire you so much at your ability to put things together. You're a master at it, and I couldn't do what you've done. And I think working together with you has really worked very well. There was a good chemistry, but your ability to promote and to organize the events it was masterful.
Well, we certainly were a great partnership, and I hope that will continue. And I'll just finish with the one short vignette, which I'm not even sure is appropriate to share on air, but I'll do it anyway. I remember at one of our concerts in December, I think, of 2005, which was at Avery Fisher Hall, and I went out to the bathroom at intermission, and there was two gentlemen standing there, and one said to the other, "What do you think about that guy, the MC up there?" He's like, "Oh, you mean that millionaire, Charlie Burnout?" Oh. Little did they know, Charlie, that you and I are both broke. But you know what? We have so much love for the trade and the cantorial music, and made up for any financial deficiency that we have.
Well, we're very, very rich in different ways, and I have no regrets. Well, Benny, thanks for sharing these thoughts, and we'll be seeing you soon.
My pleasure.
And keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Okay, shalom. Okay, that was my interview just a few days ago with my dear friend, cantor Benny Rogoznitsky, who is at Park East Synagogue. He is not only Chazan Sheni, but he also is very involved in running the shul. We're next going to hear from a dear friend of mine, cantor Zevi Muller of the West Side Institutional Synagogue on West 76th Street in Manhattan. I'm very pleased to have with me on the phone a good friend and a wonderful chazan, Zevi Muller. Shalom, Zevi.
Hi, Charlie. It's a pleasure being with you.
Thank you. Many people who have been following your career have always been very excited as to how you're developing. During these 3 weeks, I've decided that I want to share with my listeners background and ideas from various cantors. So that's our subject for this conversation. First of all, tell us...
Oh, nice. That's a wonderful idea.
Well, thank you. How about, let's start at the beginning. How did you come into Chazanis?
Good question. The answer, I think, I can break it to two parts. One is I got to Chazanut through davening, through listening to Nusach, going to shul every Shabbat, Friday night and morning, and always enjoying when I heard somebody that davened well, somebody that made davening interesting. I think that opened the music of Chazanut for me to enjoy. And then more formally, what we call cantorial compositions, which is a, you know, an elaboration of what I think is Nusach. This is something that I had in my family. My uncle is a well-known chazan from Belgium, and we used to have his CDs, Cantor Benjamin Muller,
uh-huh,
in Antwerp, Belgium.
Where were you at the time? Were you in the States?
Then I was in Israel. My parents at the time lived in Israel. As a uh-huh. teenager, I grew up in Israel.
I see. By the way, let's go back. Where were you born?
So I was born in Israel, but my parents lived in Switzerland for most of my childhood years.
Uh-huh.
All my siblings were born in Switzerland. And then at about age seven, my parents moved to Israel back. They actually moved back to Switzerland about 12 years ago. But during those years, during my teen years, I was in Israel.
I see.
I went to yeshivot in Israel, and that was where I grew up.
Uh-huh. So it was through just going to shul and listening to various chazanim?
Yeah, so that's number one. It's always, for me, chazanut was always just nusach, nice nusach, and good davening. For me, it was always what chazanut is and what chazanut was. But of course, I had a lot of influence also from you know, cantors that performed cantorial compositions. And my uncle was for me was always the door to that world. We always had these CDs playing at home. His music was the music that I knew very well. I also, of course, got to know compositions for many Chazanim. My grandmother, who had a beautiful voice, she recorded a few compositions from Yosel Rosenblatt.
Really?
I remember as a child, I used to listen to those recordings and always inspired and influenced by them.
Wow. You have brothers also who are into music.
Right. So I have my oldest brother, who is a chazan at the Chal Meir in Tel Aviv, a very prestigious synagogue where Shlomo Ravitz was the cantor, Leibel Glantz was the cantor, really prestigious shul in Tel Aviv. And I have another brother who is a cantor in Germany, in Krefeld, Germany.
He's there now?
High holidays. He's in Israel, but he's there every high holidays in Germany.
Right, his name is...
for them.
What is his name?
His name is Shmuel.
Shmuel, and your other brother?
And my older brother is Moshe.
Moshe. I know the three of you have...
And I have my younger brother, David, who's also during the high holidays, he's a cantor in my father's shul in Switzerland, in Baden, Switzerland.
Wow.
He's there for the high holidays.
Wow. I know you've had some concerts where several of your brothers sang with you.
Correct, yeah. We love singing together. My two brothers live in Israel, and us two, me and my younger brother, David, live here in the States. But when we get together, it's always a blast,
uh-huh.
A music blast.
that actually happened
that this coming Shabbat, three of us are going to Montreal for Shabbat Chazanut.
Oh, really? Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Where?
I don't know if the person wanted me to tell, but this one person who loves Chazanut, loves pure Chazanut, and he does it in his house.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be in a private house in Montreal. We go there once a year. It's always a pleasure. For me, it's the hardest Shabbat in the year to prepare for because I have to do Chazanut. I can't just go and sing songs. It's real cantorial compositions, but it's a real pleasure.
Is that Howard? Howard's home?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
His name is Mr. Lebowitz.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's got to be quite an experience. Wow, that's terrific.
Yeah, it is.
Well, Montreal, that's in Montreal.
Yeah.
Okay, because yeah. Toronto is where your wife is.
Toronto is where my wife is from.
Yes, yes. It was wonderful being at your wedding a few years back. Yes. So tell us prior to being at Westside Institutional, where you are now, were you davening at any other shuls?
So I was, for 2 years, I was a chazan for the high holidays in Switzerland prior to coming here. And then at age 20, I guess, I became the chazan at Westside Institutional Synagogue here on the Upper West Side of New York. And it's always an honor, Charlie, to have you there.
Oh, well.
See you coming to that show.
It's such a pleasure. So how many years have you been there already? Oh, my gosh.
Over eight years.
Oh, time is really flying by. That's something.
It is.
Well, I admire your shul for the commitment they've made to you because, you know, it's so difficult for chazanim to find worthwhile, shuls.
Positions.
Yeah, positions. And
right.
I am so pleased that you're within walking distance.
I agree. I mean, it's a compliment to some shuls and especially to Manhattan shuls. But still higher chazanim. We have here on the Upper West Side three young chazanim today that are serving in the shuls. We have at Jewish Center, my friend Chaim David Burson, and at Lincoln Square, my friend Yanki Lemmer.
Yes.
Who is taking over Chazan Sherwood Goffin's position, and it's a real pleasure to have them around. We get together and get insights from each other.
Uh-huh.
But it's a compliment to the neighborhood.
Well, you've also been at the forefront of running kumsitzes at your shul, and it's something that has always been very exciting.
That's true. Friday nights, when you live on the Upper West Side, I assume people know, but Upper West Side, there are, according to some estimates, more than 5,000 Froom singles. And when you have that large number of singles that they want to get together Friday night, when you do a kumsitz, you don't have to advertise much. The place is full.
Really?
it's nice for our people, for our members, even if they have kids, if they're married, always enjoy the kumsitz. But you just get flooded by those singles that want to do something Friday night and want to meet other people. So definitely the Upper West Side is the place for a kumsitz.
Yes, it's very exciting being in this area. And we even get a little over to the east side, and that rounds out the picture. I mean, the upper
right.
east side and west side are really areas where Chazanes is thriving. Of course, you've got Yassi Malavani and Helfgott and Yaakov Stark and Davis and Ozzy Schwartz. So, and there's room for more, I guess. So,
right.
What are your feelings about Chazanes and its future?
Yeah, it's always a question, and it's something that we talk often about, and it's a good opportunity, I guess, to speak it over again over the radio. I think, again, there are two components to what we call about Chazanut and the future of Chazanut. So there is Chazanut, which is just the nusach of the davening. When we pray, we have a certain mode, a certain music formula that we use when we pray. This is something that we have inherited for centuries. It's part of the Siddur. And this can be very, very beautiful when it's done well. You know, and I know, it can be very boring and frustrating at times when people don't sing and daven it well, but it can be so nice and so interesting when people daven it the proper way, with the nice intonation, with the nice feeling. So that's one part of Chazanut, and I think that this part has a very, very strong future, because it's part of the nusach. People many times know it from their homes. It's something that people have easy time to connect. That's one part. Then there is part of what we call cantorial compositions. And cantorial compositions is a very specific form, art form of music that I think is developed and being evolved from the nusach of the tefillah, but it has today, specifically with the recordings, it has its own form and its own style. Now, when we talk about this type of art form, I think that the fact is that most people, and I would say 90% of people that go to shul today, do not have an affinity or a special liking towards that music. They don't listen to this music. This is not the music they grew up with. It's not something they connect to. And in my opinion, Chazanim have to be very cognizant of this fact. And when they daven in a shul, unless the people really want to have this type of cantorial compositions, they have to be very, very aware that this is not exactly the music that people like or know. So in terms of Chazan, I think their responsibility when it comes to cantorial music is split to two. One is the cantor is responsible to introduce this type of music to people and hope that some people connect to it and people learn to appreciate at least some aspects of it, but at the same time not to overload the people with this music, because it's just not their music.
Uh-huh.
So I think there's a very, very fine balance between using that music, but at the same time not to overload the people with the music.
Yeah, and it can be learned and acquired.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's in my opinion, it's the nicest form of music. Because music has a role just to sometimes soothe the mind. You know, you sit in a car or you sit in the home and you listen to some classical music or just some what they call Hasidic Jewish music. You can enjoy it and it relaxes you. But the music that really, really penetrates your heart and talks to you, for me, is the cantorial music. It's the music that talks. It's it's the music that has a lot of meaning into it. So absolutely, if I can make people enjoy this music, the reward and the satisfaction is great.
Who are some of the cantors, or what are some of the cantorial pieces that are your favorites?
Good question.
That's a tough one, I know.
There are many. There are many, too many to count. But to be honest, my uncle, Cantor Benjamin Muller, was always a favorite.
Yes.
I am biased, and I know that I'm biased, but it's okay. In music, you're allowed to be biased. The point is to enjoy
yes,
it.
Of course. What's interesting also, he has so many sons that also sing along with him.
Right. So his three sons, my first cousins, all three of them are cantors in Europe. One son is a cantor in Whitefield in Manchester, Yossi. The other son, Israel, is actually the chief cantor of Europe, because he's the cantor at the Great Synagogue of Brussels.
Oh, wow.
Where the EU is seated.
Uh-huh.
And he actually recently became the chaplain of the Belgian army.
Wow.
So he's really getting involved in Belgium. And mm-hmm. then I have another cousin, Rafael, who's a cantor in Manchester as well.
Fascinating. Well, and are there other Mullers? Does Benjamin have...
It's our family. My father. My father is a rabbi and a cantor in Switzerland.
Uh-huh.
And my uncle and his family, we are all involved.
Right.
Let's go back to your question about favorite. So
sure.
My uncle was always, just in terms of, I think it has to also, when you know the person and you understand how he expresses things, it's easier to connect. And that's one of the reasons. But to name just a few, there are so many. The label at glance, few of his pieces are really, really magnificent. He has a cantorial piece called Kol Hashem Chotzev Lavot Esh, which we recite on Friday night. Really a true piece that expresses the words, and his magnificent voice and music is just shining through those words. There's Yossel Rosenblatt, again, a real, real favorite. This is a composition that I listen a lot to, and that's Al Chait. Al-Hate is about, it comes from the vidui that we say on Yom Kippur night, Yom Kippur throughout actually the day. And really, Yossel gets to the feeling of the sense of confession of the sins that we did, and he expresses it so nicely. Yossel has many pieces there. Yossel has a famous piece, Meloch, also from Rosh Hashanah prayer, about defining God as our king. And the music is very aristocratic and really expresses the words of Meloch HaKol Olam Kulo B'Chavodecha, God, just be our king and rule the world through your Kavod.
By the way, your uncle is a great proponent of Rosenblatt's selections, and I have heard him sing some of those magnificently also, you know.
Right. I mean, I guess just like me, he grew up listening to Yossel's pieces. And when you grow up with those pieces, it just stays with you.
Uh-huh. Now, just as an aside, for my listeners, you have gotten your PhD, or you're working towards it?
I'm studying right now towards my PhD, but it's not music related.
No, of course. It's in what area?
It's theoretical neurosciences. I'm studying the brain.
Wow.
I'm doing some research trying to understand the brain. That's a very fascinating organ of the body that is worth learning, I think.
I know you once took me and Helen to the lab where you showed us some mice that you were... Where was that? The Rockefeller...
Right. So I used to work at Rockefeller. I was a research assistant at Rockefeller. I used to work with animal models to understand the brain. But now I'm at Columbia, and I'm doing now more computational models, working with computers more within the animals, trying to understand mathematically how the brain operates and encodes information.
Wow. Fascinating. Yeah. Fascinating. Well,
I have to tell you that I just read in a Columbia University magazine, they say that... more than one-third of Columbia's medical students are musicians. Somehow the easy connection between science and music, I don't know if it's explained, but the easy connection.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, there's a stimulation that occurs, you know, when music touches the soul, it's touching your mind also. I mean, the mind and the soul, and music does have that way to stir within you, reach you.
It touches you in the fullest sense of the word. That's true.
Well, you know, I've always, you know, said it's Jewish soul music. It's so unique. I don't know whether other religions have quite the font of music that can touch the listener. I mean, you know, in the churches, I guess they have, you know, the choirs and the organs and, you know, magnificent sounds, but I don't know how. In terms of individual singers, you can appreciate the music.
Especially I think because of the fact that cantorial music and Jewish music has evolved from praying, has evolved from just expressing yourself. It did not evolve from abstract modes of music and trying to make nice music. It evolved from just trying to express yourself. And I think that's the reason it's really so touching.
Well, any other thoughts about Chazanut? It's been fascinating to hear your background.
It's always a pleasure talking to you. But if I may, I'll say one thing about, not so much perhaps about Chazanut, more about Chazanim. Is that, you know, we always talk, and Charlie, you and I have these conversations, how Chazanim can be more, how can Shul have the incentive to hire more Chazanim. I think that Chazanim today need to go a little bit back to the tradition and the role that they used to hold in synagogues. Chazanim are not supposed to be just those that come and deliver the davening and go home. They need to be involved in shul. They need to be part of the shul. They need to take leadership role in the shul that they belong to. And I think if Chazanim do some of this type of work, shuls will have more incentive to hire Chazanim. And the influence that Chazanim could have through their deeds and through their music will be even larger.
I agree. Recently, just last week, I was in Teaneck. I gave a presentation at Rabbi Prasansky's shul, B'nai Yeshurun, and afterwards, there were about 100 people there. We had a little discussion. I said, you know, here you've got maybe 12 or 15 Orthodox shuls, and there isn't one full-time chazan. I said, at least bring in a cantor once or twice a year. Well, they did mention that one brings in Motzin, and that Netanel lives there, and he does a concert or so. But I think every shul should almost have it as a requirement. I once said, if every shul would bring in a chazan once a year, do you know how many cantors there would be, that were available and it would raise the awareness of chazanut? That's a project I think I have to work on, you know. If you want to be...
Oh, yeah, that would be amazing. I would like to say that there is a misnomer. People say that Young Israel has in its bylaws that they're not allowed to hire a chazan or so. I asked once a person who read the bylaws, and he told me it's not written in the bylaws.
Oh.
So, you know, the misnomer that Young Israel was founded on the idea that no cantors can be hired, I think is wrong.
Yes, yes. Well, and I admire the Shul, West Side Institutional, for recognizing you as such a valuable asset to their service. I can't even imagine going to the shul without seeing you there and hearing your wonderful voice.
Thank you.
Of course, my listeners know my fondness for you and your wife, and I look forward to working with you and the Chazanim and continuing to do what we can to spread the word.
Yeah, and we all Chazanim, and I say it about myself, but on behalf of myself, but on behalf of many of my colleagues and my friends, we are very, very appreciative of the work that you do. Everywhere we go, you know, your name comes up as a person that, you know, holds the light of Chazanut today, that makes sure that it's present. People don't forget about it. It's through the concerts that you did, it's through the show that you do, and then it's just through all the emails that you send throughout the year about the control of calendars and other updates. We are highly, highly appreciative, and I personally very appreciative of your friendship and support.
Well, it's feeling is mutual, and thank you so much for sharing these thoughts with us. And, you know, I was undertaking this, you know, when am I going to play for the 3 weeks? And I said, you know what? I want the audience to be able to hear the voice of the Chazanim, not just in the singing, but with their ideas. And it was really wonderful speaking with you.
Yeah, wonderful idea. I think it's a wonderful idea.
Thank you so much, and regards to Chaya.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlie. Regards to
Alan. Okay, shalom. Okay, that was my conversation with Chazan Zevi Muller. And we have one more Chazan for this first hour. I caught Cantor Yaakov Motzin in Israel. Unfortunately, he had a slight cold, and I believe you'll be able to hear it clearly. So let's go to Yaakov Motzin.
Okay.
I'm very pleased to have with me on the phone in Israel a good friend, Yaakov Motzin, and we're going to hear a little bit about his life and his thoughts about Chazanus and the like. Shalom. How are you, Yaakov?
Shalom. Maslomchem. Baruch Hashem. Very good. And you?
Mitzuyan. I want to begin by just asking you where you were born and where you were raised.
Okay. As the truth is, they told me that I was born in Tel Aviv because I was very young to remember. But I was raised in Tel Aviv for 13 years. And then I went to Yeshivot, to Kultura in Yerushalayim, Be'er Yaakov, and Konvent in Bnei Brak. Then I did the army, my service, and then I left to Canada in 1978. For about 30 years, I've been in Montreal and then Toronto. And then I moved to New York. I moved to Florida, but I moved to New York about 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I'm housing in the shul of Bal Harbor, Rabbi Lipsker's rabbi, and there I'm a chazan, unfortunately part-time, because, as I'm sure you know, and probably the listener know, that today Orthodox chazan is full-time job. It's very rare.
To say the least, yes.
Yeah, and the ones that have maybe full-time job, the few of them, most of them need another two jobs.
I know that is an issue. I'm often asked how a young fellow would contact me, he wants to become a chazan, and I said, look, I don't know, you may have a rare, wonderful gift, but if you don't, I suggest that you go out and earn a living and let chazanus be your avocation, because there's very few opportunities to raise a family. And
that's what I'm saying to students that are going to school of chazanut. I'm telling them, it's very nice that you don't know Nusach. It's very important. It's very nice that you have talent. But unfortunately, you better get a real job. This is only as a hobby and maybe a little bit of part-time, because on any 10 chazonim, maybe there's one job available. Even the holiday, I know people that a lot of shuls that used to take chazonim, they don't take them anymore because some of the balabatim feel that they can do the job.
Mm-hmm.
The rabbi takes the job, and right. That's what happens. So,
yes.
Still in the concert and Shabbos here, Shabbos there, but that's it. But my voice, but I have a bit cold.
Okay. I hope you're not singing tonight.
No, I'm.
I want to hear, how did you become interested in Chazanut?
Interested? I told this once before, that my mother told me that for 2 years I was crying every night. I probably developed my wrong delivery. Uh-huh. But the truth is, it's by us as a family. First of all, from my mother's side, I got the very good ear. She's very musical, and she remembered tunes. She knows all the nusach of my late father, Philip Osher and Peter, because she was listening to him and even to his rehearsals before Yom Tov. And my grandfather, my father's father was the chazan in Pressburg, in Bratislava. My great-grandfather was a Balfile slash chazan with a choir, even though he was going Steinbo, in Kosan. So in our family, we have it. I'm probably the first real chazan in as a chazan, not only Balfile.
Uh-huh.
Even though I'm trying to be first Balfile and then a chazan, and that's what my father taught me. And then the kid, I was singing in choir from Chazan Shlomo Rabitz, and then with my father. Then I was in the choir of the Mojitze Rebbes, at the time, a chosid of the Mojitze Rebbes. And then, age 17, I became the Chazan.
At the age of 17. I saw you in
a few years ago, I saw you in
Teaneck when you did a thing with I think Benzion Schenker was there. You did a wonderful Mojitz concert.
No, that was Benzion Schenker. It was the son-in-law of the Reb Scholl.
Oh, okay. Right.
Rabbi Weinberg.
Yeah, it was Weinberg. Wonderful. It was really wonderful.
Yeah.
So you from the age of 17, you've been singing, and tell us.
Singing, I started at the age of zero almost.
Yes.
After the chazan, I started at 17. I was in Givatayim. Then I became the chief cantor of Givatayim. I was 1 year in Haifa in the Great Synagogue, and then I was in Ramat Gan in the Great Synagogue, the chief chazan, and then 78 I left to Montreal, then to Toronto.
How was life in Toronto and Montreal for you?
When I came, really, it was 78, 76, the French people came in, so a lot of Jews left. But still was a real lover of Chazanut, lovers of Chazanut. Was a lot of people that still, I mean, you know, relatively, talking about close to 35 years ago, so survivors were in the 40s, the 50s. So they are very much of people that listen to Chazanut in their home. So we had, let's say concerts. We did every year, did concert in Montreal and in Toronto. With the fact, in 1981, I brought Dudu Fischer and his brother-in-law, Avi Albrecht. You're talking many years ago.
Yes.
My shoe, before I came even, we had John Pierce. In 1980, we brought to our show the late cantor David Kosevitsky, who was still very good chazan. Chazan Tziaroni, and other Shalom. I mean, we had concert every year, and in Montreal, my concert was minimum between 1,500 to 1,800 people at the concert.
Right.
Sold out. In Toronto, the same thing. I was from one of the in the first year or two of Chazan Helwood becoming, you know, so famous.
Mm-hmm.
He came to Toronto in the 90s. Then Mizrahi, of course, Benzion Miller, that I brought in many times. We probably performed most of concert together more than other Chazan.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I can mention any name that you know, really was at our show in my concert.
Right. But those days are past, sadly.
And Chazan Baglik, of course, all of us know Chazan Baglik.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, I performed with everybody, and the concert was full. Another fact, in Miami, I used to go to Miami every year, and we had minimum anything between 5 and 10 concerts that I know in a certain area. Today, very rarely. So, for somehow, young generation don't have
the appreciation.
But they don't appreciate it from Chazan. Even though I believe that when they listen to a Chazan, and if he's a good Chazan, and know how to cater for the people, because today, unfortunately, not too many people like to listen to the old fashion of chazanos, even though it was unbelievable, and to sit for many hours. Even though in Israel, when I'm performing, I mean, davening Shabbat, they really want blood from 8 till 1, 2, sometimes no intermission.
Wow.
But normally they don't want it, but so in chazan today, I have to try to do one piece chazanos, sing with the people, try to sing things that belong to the Nusach and not something else.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious as to who some of the your favorite cantors from the past who may have influenced you.
Look, from the past, again, I have my saying that I say to people sometimes, and the first minute they don't like what I'm saying. When I'm saying, nobody is a chazan like me, and like they look, excuse me, and I said, I tell you the truth, because there is better or worse. Because every chazan, every dotzil, and every singer have something that somebody else don't have. So for instance, Yosele, I believe that he was probably the greatest because he had the most beautiful voice and a composer. Moshe Kusevitzky Roshan was unbelievable voice, but really was not a composer. Leiba Leglant was the greatest in my opinion because he was a Lechadesh, somebody who did new thing, and not everybody liked him, but for me he was one of the greatest person chazan that understand the prayers, mm-hmm. not only davening and saying something notes that fits sometimes, sometimes not. Then you had Hirschman, that was the most beautiful voice, but didn't compose to anything. Chazan Genshoff composed and most of all, he took pieces from Rappaport and Alter and made them so beautiful. So every chazan have something that I took or listened, or my teacher was chazan Yitzchak Eshel. It was also unbelievable.
Eshel is he's fantastic. You know, I love his recordings. He had something. It almost reminds me a little of Glantz, just in the way they have they touch you. He was very special.
Because he was, matter of fact, I studied by him close to 7 years, and really, I mean, study not once in a year, almost every week. And a lot of people asking me, how come you study by Eshel, you almost don't say ever any piece of Eshel? So I said, to say a piece of Eshel, it's very hard, because his coloratura was really outstanding. And the high notes, and it was beautiful. But by him, I studied how to pray, how to take a piece, even a non-piece, and do it the way that I understand the prayer and the piece. And that's what I got from Chazan Eshel.
Mm-hmm.
And he was amazing. From the Vinit Chazal, to me, the only one, and really, said, so to speak, maybe even his age is not belonging to the last generation, but he's one of the oldest Chazal, is Chazan Moshe Stern.
Moshe Stern, yes.
That he lived for many, many years. To me, he's one of the greatest. I have a lot of davening, live davening. I was there. Some of them I helped without being there. But he is amazing, amazing
yes.
davener. And
yes.
that's what I believe, that the chazan has to be, as I said to you before, that's what my father taught me. You have to be a good Beltfile in order to be a good chazan. Because if you're not Beltfile, so maybe you're a record player, but not a chazan.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Schulhoff always said that. Also, he was a great proponent. He said, "You gotta be at the Umid first, and if you can't do the Umid, forget about the mm-hmm. concert."
Schulhoff was a great davener also, because again, he was understanding the davening, and not that I think that we have a lot of chazanim, that davening unbelievable. Take a Bentin Miller, that is also a beautiful performer, but he knows how to stand the Beomud. And one of the reasons is because he had a father that was a chazan, Beltfile. He was listening to great chazanim. Me too. I had this chutzpah to listen to Moshe Pesavitsky, Lieder, Adonai, Moshe Shtorem, Eshel, Unger, many chazanim that daven.
Uh-huh.
And that's what some of the chazanim today don't have it. They listen to records. So they're becoming a very good record player.
Yes.
But they have to know how to stand on the Omud. And that's a lot of chazanim, in my opinion, missing.
I also, in reviewing all the great cantors from the past, almost every one of them sang in a choir when they were a child, and I think that that early age influenced them so strongly.
I sang also in the choir with, as I said, Chazan Fodorovich was the conductor, so I sang with Bill Komilsky, I sang with Chazan Meir Shushan, Oliver Sholem. So, of course, choir helped, especially if you... But the Omud standing somebody to know how to daven.
Yes, yes, the influence. So, what's going to happen with the future of Chazanot?
This is the million-dollar question that's already been asked for the last 50, 60 years. And for some reason, in miracle, in the concert hall, it's getting there. I mean, you have concert, not as used to be. At the shul, as I said to you, in Israel, for instance, I have a lot of Shabbatot, and during many shuls have like one or two Shabbatot during the year, so it's not a lot. But they have a lot of shuls. I'll say about 20 shuls, 30 shuls, that is nothing compared to all Israel. But remember, most of the Shabbatot here in Israel, they have also choir.
Uh-huh.
And this costs money.
Yes.
And so really Israel is the only place, unless you have a shul that have a regular choir, like Cantor Helgut shul, Cantor Ben Zion Miller shul.
Herstig,
I don't
yeah.
think that they have too many, and Herstig,
yeah.
And the Tanner, and of course the great synagogue in Yerushalayim.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise you don't have regular Shabbat davening with choir.
The choir, yeah.
I'll say all the Shabbatot that I govern in Israel and or any other chazan that come to Israel or a local, 99.9, it's with a choir because the people say we want to hear, so to speak, the old. And you'll be surprised how many young people come
mm-hmm.
to listen to this davening. If you go to the great synagogue, I davened there, for instance, last year I was a guest chazan with the choir of Yankele Rotman with 60 male choir, and was over 2,000 people.
Wow.
And it was from everywhere. It was Natura Karte, Yeshiva Bochim,
Leumim.
It was all mixed from all over. It was beautiful. People stood for the old house that I love. So you have people, but unfortunately, not everybody will like to daven with the chazan. Like some of them will daven early in the morning, and then will come already after the kiddush. So it's much easier for them. Those at the radio are telling you what happened. You know, when they come after the chong.
Well, one thing, when Benny and I ran our Shabbatons after Shachas, we would have the Kiddush for an hour and then come back for Musaf.
Yes, some of the shul, for instance, once a year, the tourist company, it's called Tuplos, they bring for the last few years Shabbat Shira, really a huge one in Ramada in Yerushalayim. They have something about 900 people that coming from Thursday, and they have a concert with a chazan, sometimes with a singer, and then Shabbat davening. So they start at 8 o'clock, by 11 o'clock they finish Kriyat HaTorah, you understand? 3 hours later. And then they're having 1 hour of, so to speak, breakfast, lunch, something like this.
Right.
And then 12 o'clock till about 2:30, they have Musaf, and of course everything is choir, and then about 3 o'clock is the main dinner, so to speak, but it's also Shalosh Sudot, because the davening minister is before already.
So this is
five, 6 o'clock is already.
Well, is this every year?
For the last year, before it was to be another company by the name Krauss. They did it for many, many years. I did also with him, but Natup was the last 3 years. Was Kenton Helwood, was me, was also other Chazanim. Sometimes it's the concert was the official. Every year he bring something out.
Uh-huh.
But the Davening Baruch Hashem, I did 2 years in a row with the choir of the Pa'amonim choir of Yossi Schwartz. Very good choir. Matter of fact, I don't remember that Yossi Schwartz was the one that conduct the concert that we then had in Park East last December.
Uh-huh.
Young talent.
Well, I try to be optimistic. I do find young people need to learn. They need to be exposed to it. It's very difficult to just be exposed to just records. But
I think that your program probably helped a lot to do it.
Well, there are some people who sort of discovered it, and I'm proud of that fact. I've always enjoyed your davening, and you're one of my favorites, Yaakov.
Thank you very much. I try my best.
I do enjoy your recordings, and I enjoy your davening, and I look forward. I don't know where. If Benny and I could ever get back, or people are always asking, no.
I really hope so, because this was the best, I think, Shabbatonim from every point of view, from the Chazon's point of view, the organization, the food, everything you had. And I believe that you also should start again.
Well, it's a dream of ours. We talk about it, and you'll be the first to know.
I hope that the dream will come true.
Well, listen, I appreciate you taking the time to share these thoughts with us, and I look forward to seeing you.
Are you coming to Israel?
You know what? I was just there a couple of weeks ago, and I was there for the month of Morach. I was...
I have permission, you can come again.
Yes, yes. Actually, today my three grandchildren are on a plane. They're spending summer... my daughter-in-law is Israeli, so it's I'm sort of there. My soul is there. Okay,
if you come, we'll be happy to meet you and to see you.
Thank you so much.
In the meantime, have a good day.
Same to you.
Shabbos.
Same to you. And regards to Marcia. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Okay, so that was Yaakov Motzen, and I know he had a cold. I trust that you were able to hear his comments, and next hour will be very interesting. All of these, I was going to say, very interesting. They've all been interesting, but you're going to really find Yossi Mulvaney's of great interest also, and cantor David Guber. Thanks for joining with me, and the next 2 weeks also will be a continuation with interviews with cantors and with those involved in Chazanut. Any comments or requests, you can reach me at cbjmusic@aol.com. cbjmusic@aol.com.